Hare Rama, Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare Krishna, 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 Jai Jai Prabhupada, 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 Jai Prabhupada. Jai Vishnupada Paramahansa Padiva Jagacharya, Astatara Satasvi Srimadiskan Founder Acharya, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada ki Kantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki Harinam Sankirtan Yajna ki Yugogadandam ki Gopremanandi. All glory to the assembled devotees. All glory to the assembled devotees. All glory to the assembled devotees. Glory to Guru Gauranga. So this morning we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 8, entitled The Character of Bharat Maharaj, text number 31. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Tasmin api kalam patikshamana sangach cha visham udvinga atma Sahachara Shuksha Parna Trina Virda Vatamano Migatva Nimitavasanam Eva Ganayan Mrigashariram Titodaka Trinam Utshasharja. How do you chant this? You don't? It's not responsive, right? Okay. Tasmanapi. In that ashram. Kalam, the end of the duration of life in the deer body. Patikshamana, always waiting for. Sangat, from association. Cha, and. Brisham, constantly. Udvignaha, full of anxiety. Atma Sahachara, having the Supersoul as the only constant companion. No one should think of being alone.
Shukshapana
Trinaviruda. By eating only the dried leaves and herbs.
Vatamana.
Existing. Mrigatva
Nimita.
Of the cause of a deer's body.
Avashanam.
The end.
Eva.
Only.
Ganayan.
Considering.
Mrigashariram.
The body of a deer.
Tirta Udaka Klinam.
Bathing in the water of that holy place.
Utsasarja.
Gave up. Translation. Remaining in that ashram, the great king, Bharat Maharaj, was now very careful not to fall victim to bad association. Without disclosing his past to anyone, he remained in that ashram and ate dried leaves only. He was not exactly alone, for he had the association of the Supersoul. In this way, he waited for death in the body of a deer. Bathing in that holy place, he finally gave up that body. Purport. Holy places like Vrindavan, Haridwar, Prayag, and Jagannath Puri are especially meant for the execution of devotional service. Vrindavan specifically is the most exalted and preferred holy place for Vaishnava devotees of the Lord, who are aspiring to return back to Godhead, the Vaikuntha planets. There are many devotees of Krishna in Vrindavan who regularly bathe in the Jamuna, and this cleanses all the contamination of the material world. By constantly chanting and hearing the holy names and pastimes of the Lord, one certainly becomes purified and becomes a fit candidate for liberation. However, if one purposefully falls victim to sense gratification, he has to be punished, at least for one lifetime, like Bharat Maharaj. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 5th canto, 8th chapter, Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled A Description of the Character of Bharat Maharaj. Translation again. Remaining in that ashram, the great king Bharat Maharaj was now very careful not to fall victim to bad association. Without disclosing his past to anyone, he remained in that ashram and ate dry leaves only. He was not exactly alone, for he had the association of the Supersoul. In this way, he waited for death in the body of a deer. Bathing in that holy place, he finally gave up that body. Om Agyan Timanandasya Ginangana Shalakaya Chakshana Militam Jainatasmai Sigurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobistam Shtapitam Jainabhutale Shvayam Rupakadamayam Dadantishva Padantikam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhaktivrindam Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Om Mam Hrim Shom Om Farom Tataka Hataka Keshe Gajalak Padaka Lochana Benharaka Naka Sparsa Divasingha Namostate. So in this verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, we hear how Maharaj Bharat, now in the form of a deer, due to his past deviation from the strict path of devotional service, is becoming purified simply by residing in a holy place. I think it's mentioned the forest of Shalogram, if I remember correctly. And Srila Prabhupada takes the opportunity in his purport to elaborate on the point that there are many holy places, particularly in India, which are meant for rendering devotional service to purify our existence. Of course, there wasn't much devotional service that Maharaj Bharat could do in the form of a deer. Generally, devotional service is performed by human beings. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Shmaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Bandham, Dasham, Sakyam, Atmam, Ivedanam. These types of devotional service, the nine processes of devotional service, can be easily executed in the human form of life. But for a deer, the body of a dumb animal, shravanam kirtanam vishnu smaranam, perhaps some hearing could go on, but generally dumb animals, they don't understand what they're hearing. And certainly they can't chant Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Of course, by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, they can. We heard in Jharikhanda forest, even the animals were chanting Hare Krishna. But generally speaking, in the body of a dumb animal, it's like prison. Actually, it's like hell. Definition of hell. One definition of hell is that one cannot glorify God. One cannot engage in God consciousness. So sometimes the spirit soul, when he's particularly sinful, he's sent to the body of a low-grade animal. And that in itself is a type of hellish existence. There's no ability to understand God. So Bharat Maharaj, in the form of a deer, there really wasn't very much devotional service that he could do. But nonetheless, Srila Prabhupada points out, just by the fact that he was residing in a holy place, he became purified. The influence of a holy place like Vrindavan, like Mayapur, so many holy places, we should never underestimate their transcendental potency. In Bhagavad Gita, we hear how just before the battle of Kurukshetra, it was already concluded that the Kauravas, the Kurus, had already been defeated. Why? Because the battle was to take place at Kurukshetra, which was a holy place since time immemorial. We generally think of Kurukshetra as a battlefield. But prior to the battle of Kurukshetra, many great saintly persons assembled there to engage in spiritual activities, because it was known as a very, very sacred place. So just the fact that the battle was to be fought in a sacred place was in the favor of the pious, the righteous, the Pandavas. And it was to a disadvantage to the Kurus. Just the fact that it was fought in that particular place. So we should not underestimate the influence or the potency of a transcendental abode, a holy place like Vrindavan or Mayapur. They have special potency. The reason that they are transcendentally surcharged is that they are the places where Lord Krishna chooses to perform his pastimes within the material world. When Krishna comes from the spiritual world, he brings the spiritual world with him. Prabhupada has discussed this many times. Just like a king, when a king goes somewhere, he takes his entourage with him. He takes his wife, he takes his queens, he takes his children, his ministers, his soldiers, so much paraphernalia, etc. So similarly, when the Supreme Lord comes from the spiritual world, he brings that transcendental abode with him. So therefore, Vrindavan is none different than Vrindavan in the spiritual world. One is Goloka Vrindavan and one is Gokul Vrindavan. But essentially there's no difference. Actually, I listened to a tape recently and it was described that when Bhumi approached Lord Brahma and prayed that Krishna would descend into the material world, Brahma appealed to the Lord and the Lord agreed to come. And it's described that he requested Srimati Radharani to also come with him, but she refused to come. She said, "What business do I have there in that nasty material world? I want to stay in Vrindavan." Vrindavan, there are so many nice Sarabi cows, there is the Jamuna River, there is Govardhan Hill. I'm not leaving Vrindavan. So Krishna had to agree, "All right, if you come with me, then we'll also take Vrindavan Dham. We'll take Govardhan Hill, we'll take the Jamuna River, we'll take all the residents, all of us will go together." So it's been described, that is why Sri Vrindavan Dham is now manifested on this earth planet by the mercy of Srimati Radharani, who refused to come to this material creation without the transcendental abode of Vrindavan. And Prabhupada mentions here in the purport that out of all holy places, there's many different holy places, but out of all the holy places, Sri Vrindavan Dham is the most exalted. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also elaborated on this principle by stating that Vrindavan is none different than Krishna himself. Therefore, Rupa Goswami has stated that out of the 64 items which are favorable for devotional service, 5 are particularly important. Chanting Hare Krishna, hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, worshipping the deity, associating with Vaishnavas, and living in a transcendental place like Vrindavan or Mayapur. And devotees who are advanced, even today, they can see the Lord's pastimes being performed there. When Śrīla Prabhupāda first went to Vrindavan, he went with his Guru Maharaj, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. And of course, as a young child, he'd been hearing so much about Vrindavan, because Prabhupāda was born in Calcutta, of course. And as a child, when he heard from his father about the pastimes of the Lord and where the Lord had performed his pastimes, Prabhupāda was always very anxious, hankering to go to these places. We know that it wasn't until he was actually in his early 20s that he went to Jagannath Puri. Although Jagannath Puri is not so far from Calcutta, Śrīla Prabhupāda's place of birth, because of his various duties and responsibilities in school, university, Prabhupada wasn't able to visit these places. He was always thinking of it. And finally he had the chance to go to Jagannath Puri, and that's elaborated in the Leelamrita, how much he appreciated that transcendental place. So also when Prabhupada first went to Sri Vrindavan Dham, he accompanied his Guru Maharaj, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, and Śrīla Prabhupada said at that time he was expecting to see Krishna appear from any bush at any moment. He was expecting, because he'd heard so much, Krishna was just going to jump out from any particular bush at any moment. So of course, for Śrīla Prabhupāda, that is a reality. Primanjani Charati Bhakti Valochanena, because his eyes are covered with the salve of pure love, there's no doubt that he did see Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan. One time Prabhupāda told us in New York, there was never a time I forgot the lotus feet of Sri Sri Radha Krishna. So certainly, Prabhupada, that vision was there for Śrīla Prabhupada. But for us, at our stage of devotional service, when we go to these holy places like Vrindavan, we have to be very careful not to see Vrindavan with our material vision. We should not doubt the potency of the Dham because we cannot see the Lord's transcendental pastimes being enacted even now. I once told the story. Prabhupada was sitting with some of his disciples. I think this was 1971 or 72, just after Prabhupada had taken some of his disciples back to India with him, and he took them to Vrindavan. And of course, those devotees also had heard so much about Sri Vrindavan Dham from Śrīla Prabhupada's lectures in New York City and San Francisco, Los Angeles. Those are some of the only temples at that time. Prabhupada was always speaking about the glories of Vrindavan Dham, how Vrindavan is a place of devotional service where so many exalted saintly persons are residing. There's Sarabi cows, there's the Govardhan Hill which Krishna lifted, the pristine, clear, beautiful Jamuna River, Kalpavriksha trees which produce all different types of fruits for devotional service, and the ground is made of Chintamani touchstone. This is how Prabhupada would speak. This is how he saw it. This is how the pure devotee sees Vrindavan. Even without being there, he could still see Vrindavan. So he was describing like this. So he took his devotees, the first disciples, Jamuna was there, and Gurudas was there, Malati, Shamsundar, different devotees. So they were sitting, and they entered into Vrindavan Dham, and they were... Prabhupada was, yes, here we are, Sri Vrindavan Dham. And the devotees were a bit disappointed, Jamuna was telling me. They were just a bit disappointed because it didn't look exactly like the way that it had been described. There were pigs, with all due respect. Not normal pigs. Prabhupada said that those pigs were devotees who had committed offense in a previous life. And due to that offense, particularly illicit sex, in the Dham, They took birth as a pig to become freed from the offense, and then after that lifetime, back home, back to Godhead. But anyway, there's the pigs, and there's the rascal monkeys, those rascal monkeys, and there's birds, they sound like any other birds, and there's dirt, and there's dust, and if many of you have been to Vrindavan, you know there's the sewers, open sewers, and there's hepatitis, and typhoid, and malaria, so. And there's Rickshaw Wallace, and there's beggars, bakshish, ekrupi, you know. So this is their first impression, very hot. Vrindavan is one of the hottest places in India during the summer, and it's one of the coldest places in India during the winter. There's a season there where we generally go. By Lord Chaitanya's mercy, the Gaur Purnima falls in the very pleasant time of the year in India. And similarly, Kartik, which is also very favorite of the Vaishnavas, that also falls in a very pleasant time during the weather season in India. We're very fortunate. But if you were to go to India now, you would be steaming hot. 50 degrees sometimes it becomes. They got the loo. It's a wind that if you're not careful, the wind goes in your ears and kills you. Goes into your brain and kills you. The loo. And winter time, very, very cold. So devotees, they were there, and when they share Prabhupada, we don't see Vrindavan Dham like you've explained it. I mean, with all due respect, look at this garbage in the streets. So many things. And Srila Prabhupada said, no, it is there. The only problem is that there's a speck in your eye. And because of that speck, you can't see clearly. Devotees went like this. You know. What is this? It's just very dusty, you know. And then, still they see. No, Prabhupada, sometimes you're walking, you get a little piece of dirt. Or on Harinam the other day, I got a little piece of gravel in my eye. I couldn't see all day. Couldn't see anything. They were thinking like this, and Prabhupada said, no, not like that. The speck in your eye is the desire for sense gratification. And because of that material desire, you cannot see Sri Vrindavan Dham as it is. So don't go like this. Go like this. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama. So for one whose eyes are purified by the salve of love, of Krishna consciousness, pure devotion, Sri Vrindavan Dham is as much a reality as are these trees and this lawn and these buildings to you and me. We should have no doubt. But for one who has that speck in the eye, we have that desire, an independent desire from Krishna, that desire for sense gratification. The Dham will not reveal itself to such a devotee. And that is why Narottam Das Thakur says that one cannot go to Vrindavan just by purchasing a ticket. I'll go to Delhi. I think the Rajdhani Express gets you there in an hour and a half, right? It costs, 25 rupees now. So you go to the Delhi train station, I'm going to Vrindavan, the transcendental abode of the Lord. And you purchase your ticket, and then you pull into the Mathura Junction, and you take the tonga, you know, the horse, and then you get there. And in one sense, yes, you are there, because we've entered into that atmosphere, but we cannot perceive it yet, because our heart is still, those desires are there. Vrindavan is actually revealed to one who possesses devotion. That is the ticket. The ticket to Vrindavan is pure devotional service. Atashi Krishna Namani Nabhaved Grayam Indriya. No one can understand the transcendental name, fame, form, paraphernalia, or abode of the Lord with his materially contaminated senses. These senses that we have now, they're not made for seeing Krishna, they're made for seeing matter. We've been given this body for this particular purpose because we want to be independent of Krishna, alright? So here's this material body. With this material body, you can attempt to enjoy the material energy. But within these material senses, there's not the potential for seeing that which is transcendental. So we cannot hope to see God like that, or God's pastimes, or his transcendental abode. Actually, these senses cannot even properly perceive what is material. They're so imperfect. We say these imperfect senses. These senses are so imperfect, they cannot even do what they're made to do. That's not a discredit to Krishna, it's just, this shows the way it is. They're so imperfect, they can't even perceive matter properly. People say sometimes, show me God. If there's God, show me. I'm ready, I'm here, come on. But with these senses, you cannot even perceive what is material, what to speak of spiritual. What is material? Earth, air, fire, water, mind, intelligence, and false ego. How many is that? Earth, air, fire, water, mind, intelligence. Seven. So, with your senses, how many can you perceive? Earth, not air, fire, water, mind, no, intelligence, no, and false ego, no. So it's that. It's 3 out of 7. Not a very good average. 3 out of 7. Out of even the material elements, your senses cannot perceive air. I mean, we have some understanding of it, of course, but with our gross senses to actually see, we can see earth, we can see fire, we can see water. But difficult to directly perceive the others. So what to speak of what is spiritual? Therefore, how to see the Dhamma? Because it's there. For those who want to see it, it's there. But what is the process of seeing according to Vedic culture? Tattva darshana. Tattva darshana. Tadvidi paripatena pariprasana sevaya upadekshanti teganam ghanayas tattva darshana. You have darshan with those who have seen the truth. Just try to understand the truth by approaching a spiritual master, inquire from him submissively and render service. The self-realized souls can give you knowledge because they have seen the truth. That is the process. We see to the eyes the tattva darshanas, those who have perceived. Yesterday, on the plane from London, someone said to me, why does someone have to come between me and God? We were speaking about the principle of disciplic succession. So someone said, I have a relationship with the Father. Why do I need someone to come in between me and the Father? I said, well, can you see the Father now? No. Do you know what his name is? No. Do you know what he looks like? No. Do you know where he lives? No. You're going to have a difficult time finding your Father. So I explained it, that the spiritual teacher doesn't come between you and God. He's like the transparent medium. He gives you the eyes, just like glasses. Eyes are defective. The thing is there, but you can't see it. It's right before your nose, but you can't see it. But the glasses, that transparent medium, makes it perceivable to you. I said, that's the principle of disciplic succession, Guru Parampara. Krishna is very, very far away. But with the Guru Parampara, like those spectacles, like the glasses, you put them all together and Krishna becomes right within your hand. It's like telescope. What is a telescope? Telescope, you look through the small end of the telescope, tiny little vision, you look through the small end, but the principle is that there's many pieces of glass there, like magnifying. And together, they bring the object, which is very far away, practically within your hand. If you look at a telescope, I remember when I was a boy, my father bought me a telescope, and I was so amazed the first time I looked at the moon. The moon was, you know, looking like a quarter in the sky. And I heard about the rabbit in the moon and everything, I couldn't see it. The rabbit in the moon. Then my father bought me a telescope for my 12th birthday, and the first thing I went out looked at the moon, and it was just like, I remember I could just like grab that moon and put it in my pocket. And I saw the rabbit in the moon. So what was the telescope? The telescope was different pieces of glass together, working together, different pieces of glass working together to bring that object which was very far away right within my grasp. So I gave this example and the boy went, that makes sense. And that actually is the principle of Guru Parampara. Krishna is very far away, but through the Guru Parampara, the mercy of these so many different transcendental personalities, we can perceive Krishna. He becomes right within our grasp. Therefore, we need the saints. to see Krishna. We need the mercy of the sadhus to understand what is Krishna, what are his pastimes, what is his paraphernalia, and what is his transcendental abode. Therefore, if one goes to such a transcendental abode as Shalagram Forest, where Maharaj Bharat is becoming purified as a deer, or one goes to Vrindavan, which is particularly recommended by Śrīla Prabhupāda, if we really want to take advantage of such a holy place, we want to see beyond the dust and the dirt and our ordinary vision. If we want to get the real benefit of such a holy place, then we have to associate with the saintly persons that live there. And what is the best way to associate with a saintly person? Well, of course, there's so many ways that we can associate with saintly persons. Even to touch the body of a saintly person is purifying to our existence. But the most potent way to associate with saintly persons is to hear from them. That's the main way that actually we associate. Because just by seeing a saintly person, well, of course there's so much benefit because his example is there. But so much is to be learned by hearing from such a person. Because when a saintly person speaks, it's like almost like painting a picture. Just like Ram Prasad. His expertise is in painting. And what is that expertise? That he can take what is very abstract and make it real. I mean, abstract, there's nothing on the canvas. And there's the conception of Krishna and Radharani and the gopis. But it's abstract, isn't it? It's not something that you can perceive immediately. We ask him, what are you going to paint? I'm going to paint a picture of Radha and Krishna and the gopis at the Jamuna River. So, you know, where is it? It's just... You can kind of think about it, but it goes away from your mind, and you know, where is it? It's abstract right now. But an expert painter, he can take the abstract, and due to his expertise, Krishna says, I am the ability in man. When using that expertise for Krishna, he can make it manifest right before our eyes, just with his hand. Right? You watch them. His hand's moving, your hand's moving, but what is happening when his hand moves? All of a sudden, there's this beautiful picture, and you can perceive it. So that is the ability of a sadhu. Sadhu literally means one who cuts with his words. So a sadhu has two businesses in his preaching. What are his two businesses? One is to reveal the real nature of the material world, and then to reveal the nature of the spiritual world. It's not that we should simply sit down and expect to hear from a sadhu only about Krishna's pastimes. Because before that desire for sense gratification is removed in our heart, that type of hearing will not really help us. We can hear, but we won't really understand. The danger is that we may become sahaja. We may think, oh, Krishna is doing like that, I can do like that, Krishna is Lord. No. We cannot really understand Krishna's most confidential Vrindavan pastimes until that desire, that lust, that anger, that greed is removed from our heart. So the sadhus, they paint a very realistic picture of the material world, just like it's stated in Bhagavad Gita. One factor of knowledge is to be able to perceive the evils of birth, disease, old age, and death. And if you were actually to go through Śrīla Prabhupāda's purports in the Śrīmad Bhāgavatam, and you would find that so many purports, perhaps more than half the purports, are about the material world. What business do Vaishnavas have hearing about the material world? Well, we're still attached to the material world. We're sadhikas. We're on the path of devotional service. So we have to gradually hear more and more about the material world to give up our false attractions so that we can become attracted to Krishna. By hearing, then we perceive what the material world is actually like. Oh, now I understand. That's sadhu. When you sit down and hear from a devotee about the material world, now it's clear. Devotees are not naive or ignorant about material life. They know more than the greatest scientist, than the greatest philosopher, sociologist, By hearing from Bhagavatam, because Bhagavatam contains all these subject matters. It is Krishna's energy, it is working wonderfully to condition, to illusion, to bind them all. And just how so? We hear that from the devotees of the Lord. It becomes very clear. It paints a very realistic picture. Like I remember when I was young, they used to have these, my mother would buy me this, I remember what it was a kind of like a little board, and then you would take a coin and you would scratch it, and then this picture would become revealed. Ever have that here? It's the kind of thing I remember. It was blank, and the fun was that you took a nickel or a quarter and you went like this, and then all of a sudden, oh, it's a tree, it's a cow, you know, it's a bicycle or something. You know, it was for like 3-year-olds or 5-year-olds or something. But it's like that when the devotees speak, then we can't really perceive what's said. But all of a sudden by speaking, oh, now I understand. Now I understand. So that is the duty of the devotee, that by his speaking he reveals the reality of material life. Abhama, bhuvana, loka, punar, arvito, arjuna, mamopete, tikantiya, punarjanma, navidyate. To my vision it may look like a place of enjoyment, but as soon as the devotee starts speaking, it becomes revealed for what it is. From the highest planet in the material world down to the lowest, all the places of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place. That much faith we have to have. Yasya devi para bhaktir yata devi tata guru. That I cannot depend upon my own sense perception to perceive what is this material world, but I have to depend upon my Guru Maharaj, my spiritual master. His speaking is the way that I see it. I see it through his words. Otherwise, very risky. It may look nice, but the reality may be completely different. Just like in, I don't know if they have it here, but in South Africa, they have a very beautiful plant. Extremely beautiful. It's called night blooming jasmine. And at nighttime, do they have it here? At nighttime, you walk around the Durban Temple in South Africa. It's very, very sweet. So I picked some of those flowers one night and I put them. I heard about jasmine tea. That's what it was. Jasmine tea. So I thought, well, I saw the Matajis when they make teas. You know, because I don't make tea. The Matajis make tea. They take the leaves and sometimes the flowers, you see. They crush them and they dry them and then they put them in a bag and you soak it and you have some jasmine tea. So I was speculating. This night-blooming jasmine is so wonderful. It's so beautiful. It's so sweet. It must be so tasty. So I took the leaves and I took the flowers and I, you know, dried them out like that and I made some. And then one day Guru Vaishnava came to my room. He saw these things drying there and he said, Maharaj, what are you doing? Oh, I'm just making some jasmine tea. He said, really? Where did you get the jasmine? I said, you know, the night blooming jasmine. No way! Deadly poisoning. Night blooming jasmine is a poison. You can, if you have an enemy, then you just give him some jasmine tea. Finish. So I was fortunate, because actually I was going to make a tea and drink it, and I wouldn't be here today. So, all glories to Giriraj Swami Ki. So it looks very beautiful, but the reality is something very different. I think in the old days also, days of yore in India, they take a beautiful little girl, like that, a little girl, and then they'd give her a little bit of poison as she grew up. Just a little bit they give. Not enough to kill her, but to develop a type of immunity. That's also the principle in vaccinations. When you immunize someone, you give them, you're actually getting a little smallpox or a little bit of cholera, a little bit of yellow fever, not enough to make you. Little girls and little
drop of deadly poison like that, and then they would develop a little bit of immunity. Then they give a bigger dose, and then a bigger dose. Every year they give her a little bit more. So that by the time she was, you know, 18 or 19, 20 years of age, then she could take a big dose, keep it under her tongue. It wouldn't affect her at all. So the kings would use those girls like spies, and they would send them to different places. And in particular, if the king wanted to kill one of his enemies, he would employ these young girls to develop a friendship with one of these male enemies, and then there would be what they call the kiss of death. She would have the poison under her tongue. It wouldn't hurt her. And she was very beautiful. 18, 19-year-old girl, very beautiful. And the enemy male would become attracted, and she would kiss him, and she would release the poison. And so she was very beautiful, but she possessed the kiss of death. So actually, sense gratification is like that, in different ways. Of course, not all sense gratification leads to death, but it certainly leads to disappointment. Whatever sense gratification there is in this material world, it has a beginning and it has an end. It's not like Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. That type of spiritual pleasure, you can also say sense gratification, but authorized, that type of intoxication that we experience when we chant and dance in ecstasy, that goes on forever. You'll never be disappointed when you chant Hare Krishna. It's not that at some stage it's going to come to the end. Chanted for so many years, I've got the result now. No. Chanting is both the means and the end. In the spiritual world, they're also chanting. You're going to chant forever. And you'll never get tired of it. But any type of sense gratification that we may become distracted to, like Bharat Maharaj, to remember, this is a very important chapter, that will have a beginning and it will have an end. And the end will be frustrating. You to enjoy, but then... So we have to see like that. That's how the sadhus speak about the material world. They speak very strongly about material life and very sweetly about Krishna. That's the difference. You'll never hear a lecture of a sadhu, you know, glorifying the material world. Not like Maharishi Yogi or Rajneesh, you know. Yes, by this mantra you will become expert businessman. You can enjoy like anything. You'll never hear that. Every time the subject matter comes up, we always condemn it. Different ways and different angles and different, with different analogies and different themes and different stories. But actually, every time the subject of the material world comes up, but as soon as Krishna consciousness, then so much glorification, it becomes so sweet. But also we consider hearing about the material world a type of sweetness in the sense that, you know, we're not getting cheated anymore. We're actually hearing for the first time what it's actually like, so that's sweet. We appreciate that. So devotee, just like a painter can take the abstract and make it real, so the devotee by speaking can take the illusion and make it just like a reality to us. It's like Krishna. When Putana appeared before Krishna, she was very beautiful. She was very beautiful. But then Krishna revealed who she really was. What did she really look like, Putana? When Krishna cured, she was 12 miles long. And, you know, she looked like a witch. Her belly was like a big pot, and her breasts were like string beans, and her hair was all scraggly. That's what she really was. So he took the illusion and he made it for what it really was. So devotees are like that. They take the so-called beautiful material world and they speak about it. Ugh, I'm no longer attracted to it. And they take that which is abstract, Krishna, and they make, oh, Krishna is so beautiful. It's by speaking, just like Rukmini. Rukmini never saw Krishna. She was a young princess. She lived in a palace with her father, Bhishmaka, I think his name was. And different sadhus used to come through the palace And she never, they were all speaking about Krishna, but she never saw Krishna. But just by hearing about Krishna, her love for Krishna became fully manifest. And so finally, she had the opportunity to see Krishna. So that is how we understand these things. Krishna, his paraphernalia, his abode. One time Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was giving a lecture and the Gaudiya Math, their lecture hall and their temple room are sometimes separated. They have a big hall for lectures and kirtans. They have another smaller room for the deity room. So he's giving a lecture and then the conch blew for Artik, and two of his disciples got up to go to the Artik, which is disrespectful to this spiritual master speaking. So they got up to leave. And then he went to the Artik, and they came back in, you know, in the middle of the lecture they came and they sat down, and we have gone to Artik. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, "Where have you been?" "Well, Guru Maharaj, we went to see Radha Krishna." He said, "You have not seen Radha and Krishna, you've only seen stone. If you want to see Radha and Krishna, you sit here and hear from your spiritual master. And that way you will understand what is Radha and Krishna." Strong chastisement. Like that we can understand Vrindavan Dham by the mercy of a saintly person. Unfortunately, Prabhupada has stated that in Kali Yuga, many unscrupulous persons, they go to the holy places in the guise of saintly persons. Someone may think, "Oh yes, I will go to Vrindavan, and then there's so many sadhus there." But even that, we have to discriminate, because this is Kali Yuga, and Kali has also entered into religion. Irreligion has become religion, and religion has become irreligion. So one has to also have some discrimination in this regard, because it is a fact that in the holy places there are men in the guise of sadhus, and it's not advantageous to hear from them. Prabhupada once told a story. I remember it was so amazing to us, because you know we were thinking it was 74, 75, we were going to go to Vrindavan, and we were thinking everyone there is. We're going to listen to all these, and Prabhupada gave a warning. You can't listen from everyone there, because some of them have ill motivation, bad motivation. He told the story that there were some unscrupulous women who desired to have an exalted child. So they go to the Dham for that purpose, that they can cause a saintly person to fall down, and by having sex with that person, then they'll conceive, you know, a great devotee or something. This is their unscrupulous motivation. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati described this is the world of the cheaters and the cheated. So there are certain men who know that there are women there who want to, you know, exploit a sadhu, so they dress up like sadhus and they go there and they very willingly get exploited. This business is going on in the Dham. And Prabhupada also, he personally knew one grain merchant who lived in Vrindavan. And this grain merchant, you see how they're there, they're doing their business, and the sadhus are going, bakshish, and everyone's giving some money to the sadhu. So the grain merchant is thinking, he's watching the sadhu, he's thinking, these sadhus are making more money than I am. I'm selling my grains in an honest way, these sadhus are going, getting more, I'll just become a sadhu. So what he would do, he would close his shop early every day, he would put on the orange robes, and he would go and he would also beg, but he would simply use it for his nonsense. He made more money than in that way. So this false representation has actually spoiled everything. Therefore we have to know, if we're going to hear from sadhus about Krishna, about his abode, about his paraphernalia, about his pastimes, we have to hear from the real sadhu. And who is the real sadhu? That is described by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when glorifying the exalted character of Haridasa Thakur. He said, some people preach, but they don't show a good example. And others, they have a good example, but they don't preach. He said, but you are the best of all devotees. You are the spiritual master of the three worlds. Why? Because you set a perfect example, and you also give your mercy to others. You also preach Krishna consciousness. That's the type of devotee we have to hear from. Prabhupada also told the story of a lady. Her son was addicted to eating sweets, and as a result, he had all bad teeth, black teeth. So she took him to the doctor one day, and she said to the doctor, it's very easy, doctor, just tell my son not to eat sweets, and then his teeth will get better. So the doctor said, you bring him back in 1 week, and I will tell him. What? 1 week? Just tell him now! No, I will tell him, but you bring him back in 1 week. This was a bit strange, she thought. So anyway, they went home. 1 week passed. She came back. Here he is. Can you tell him now? Yes. Little boy, don't eat so many sweets, because by eating those sweets, then your teeth become bad, rotten. Yes, doctor. The lady said, well, it's as simple as that. Why didn't you do it last week? So the doctor said, yes, last week I was also eating too many sweets. So if I had said something to them, then there would have been no potency. So I stopped eating sweets, and now I have the potency to say, you stop eating sweets. There was one famous Roman ruler, I forget his name. He's famous for the following statement: do as I say, not as I do. Talk about hypocrisy. Do as I say, not as I do. But it's hard to follow a leader like that. So if one wants to be a leader, and all of us are leaders in our own regards, all of us have taken responsibility as parents, as teachers, as, kings, not yet, but I'm sure there'll be some kings someday, politicians, or temple presidents, I guess that's like a king, or spiritual masters. That one should not accept that responsibility unless one is qualified to liberate his dependence from the repetition of birth and death. So it's not that we simply apply this criteria of, you know, giving Krishna consciousness to others and being exemplary. It's not that we just apply that to the, you know, the GBC men. Or we just apply it to the initiating gurus. Or we just apply it to the sannyasis. And, you know, I'm not on that level yet, I can get away. No, all of us are accepting responsibility. Every devotee in this movement is accepting responsibility. Even if you're not a king or a guru or a swami or a teacher, or you're not even a parent yet, you're just a brahmachari or a brahmacharini. I have no responsibilities. You have so many responsibilities, because all of us are coming in contact with conditioned souls. After lifetimes of wandering in this material creation, the conditioned soul gets the opportunity to come in contact with a devotee who can give him Krishna consciousness. So all of us have that responsibility to be like, to try as best as we can to follow in the footsteps of Haridas Thakur. Then we can understand this transcendental subject matter. And actually the Lord is so kind that He sends such sadhus to us. Actually, it is described that a saintly person, he's like Tirtharaj. That he's the king, he can bring, what is the word? Forget the word. But he can bring that holy place to us. One might lament that I can't go to Vrindavan is so far away. How will I fulfill the instruction of Śrīla Rūpa Gosvāmī to live in a holy place where Krishna's pastimes are performed? But all you have to do is to meet the sadhus who carry Krishna within their heart, and in their presence it's just like Śrī Vṛndāvan Dham. I mean, being with Śrīla Prabhupāda, then even just being so young in Krishna consciousness, so blind, but still being in Śrīla Prabhupāda's presence was just being like Vaikuntha, because what is the definition of Vaikuntha? That place where there's no anxieties. So the devotee, he can also carry Śrī Vṛndāvan Dham in his heart. So Vṛndāvan doesn't necessarily mean
although it does mean, but it doesn't necessarily mean that place 90 miles southwest or what is southeast of Vrindavan. No, it means that place where devotional service is being performed. Because Prabhupada described his temples as like embassies of the spiritual world. Just like an embassy is a place where the laws of that country do not act. Within Australia, I think in Canberra, they have so many embassies. The French embassy, the German embassy, the American embassy. And actually inside those buildings, the Australian law is not in effect. The American law, the French law, the German law is in effect. And that's why you see sometimes in countries where there's civil disturbance, sometimes people take shelter in the embassies because you can't come in and get somebody in an embassy because the same law doesn't apply. Or like when Krishna was present 5,000 years ago, there was a palace that was built for him by Vishwakarma, assembly house. In Dwarka, and it's described that that was such a special place that anyone who entered there was freed from the miseries of birth, death, old age, and disease. If you stayed in that parliament house, you'd get no disease, you wouldn't age even one moment. You were not subject to death as long as you stayed in there. So in the same way, one who lives within a temple where devotional service is being performed, then that devotee is not affected by the modes of nature within this material world. That's why Prabhupada established these temples. That's why he established ISKCON. I think that was the purport of yesterday's verse, that Prabhupada has created ISKCON as a place where we can come and take shelter. Take shelter from what? From the viciousness of Kali Yuga, from the modes of nature, ignorance, passion, and mundane goodness. So we're very fortunate that we have such a place like this, New Govardhan, to live in, where we can be protected from the influence of the material energy. Of course, someone may say that, well, devotees do fall into Maya in our projects, in our temples, so how is it they're not influenced? But what is the temple? Again, the temple is not four walls. The temple is devotional service, and in particular, association with devotees. So if we take, you know, close association with devotees, and we're always engaged in devotional service, to that degree that we take shelter of the devotees, take shelter of Krishna, engage in the process of devotional service, chant Hare Krishna, and refrain from sinful activity, to that degree that we can do that, we're protected. It's not that just by living here, I think Prabhupada said yesterday, the temple's not a place like a hotel for eating and sleeping. They're a place to come and perform devotional service, and if we're actually engaged in devotional service, as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. So the facility is here for everyone. The facility to be a pure devotee. The facility for living in Sri Vrindavan Dham. The facility for living in Vaikuntha. The facility for living in the spiritual world and all that it blesses us with, that we have here in this wonderful project. Sometimes when you live in a place, you know, you become familiar, and sometimes when you come from the outside in, you perceive it differently. So I was so, you know, happy to come here yesterday. It's the first time I've been to Australia in the winter time. So I was thinking I should take my ski jacket and my ski hat and my big boots and my long underwear and, you know, three sweaters. And then somebody said, no, it's not that bad in Australia. It's not like that, especially up in Mawulimbah. So I had this preconception, but then when I arrived here, I said, this is like the most beautiful time of the year. It's, you know, clear skies every day. And then to see the deities again after, you know, so many months, and all the devotees here. Actually, this is not different than Sri Vrindavan Dham. It's actually true. What is the criteria? The criteria, of course, is that, as we mentioned in the beginning, the first criteria is that a spiritual place is where Krishna has descended to perform his lila. Yoga pit means that actual point where from Goloka Vrindavan Krishna comes and sets his lotus feet on this mundane sphere. That place becomes yoga pit. So that constitutes that in itself constitutes a holy place. So has Krishna not descended from the spiritual world and placed his lotus feet on this Australian territory? What is this, Queensland? Or New South Wales? New South Wales? So here, New South Wales. I mean, what a mundane place. You don't hear anything like that in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. New South Wales. Queensland. Perth. Adelaide. No, you're Vrindavan, my. But this has become identical. Why? Because Krishna has descended in the form of his deity, which is not different than the Lord. There's no difference between the son of Nanda Maharaj and Krishna, who is so kindly standing before us now. No difference. There's no difference between Srimati Radharani in Goloka Vrindavan Dham and Srimati Radharani here in New South Wales. They have placed their lotus feet upon this place, and their pastimes are going on. We can't see, but why? Because we've got that speck there. One time Prabhupada came back with Tamal Krishna Maharaj from a program in New York, and they went into Prabhupada's quarters, and Prabhupada used to travel with little Radha Krishna deities. So his deities were there, and you know, Tamal Krishna Maharaj turned on the light. It was a soft light, a small light, and it shone very beautifully on the little Radha Krishna deities. And Prabhupada went like that. Look how beautifully Radha and Krishna are dancing tonight. And Maharaj went, you know, Prabhupada said, can you see? Look how beautiful Radharani is dancing. You know, Tamal Krishna Maharaj just kind of stepped back and just trying to appreciate Prabhupada's, you know, your spiritual vision, seeing the pastimes. So don't think that Radha and Krishna are just, you know, standing idly there in one fixed position. No. Their pastimes are going on. Giriraj Maharaj, Krishna Balaram, Gornitai. And one day, if we serve them very, very nicely, we serve them very nicely, then one day they'll speak to us. Prabhupada said that at the installation. He said that to us, we're just, you know, aspiring devotees, trying to be Vaishnavas, but he said it to those who just become hippies after being hippies, just scrubbed the dirt off, shaved off the mustache and the beard, right? Took off the blue jeans, Levi's, caked with all kinds of garbage and put on. Just a few months later, you know, a couple of years later, Prabhupada spoke to those devotees that if you see Radha and Krishna as brass, they will remain brass to you forever. But if you serve them according to the strict rules and regulations of devotional service with love, with bhakti, that most essential ingredient, then one day these deities will speak to you. Hare Krishna. Those things. So that's in some indication that, you know, the deity can speak, he can also walk. If he can walk, he can also talk. If he can talk, he can also dance. If he can dance, he can do all of his unlimited lila. The indication is there. So we are actually living in the spiritual world here, but it's up to us to come to the standard of appreciating it. Actually, here it's very easy to remember Krishna at New Govardhan. I was telling the devotees the other day that you know, because you have so much wonderful facility, even materially. I mean, Prabhupada said India, which is a material place, India is the ideal place for self-realization because why? The climate is so nice there. So that's what I was thinking yesterday. Here the climate is so nice. We don't have to struggle so hard. We can use the balance of our time for Krishna conscious activity. So both materially and spiritually, it's so favorable here. And I was just comparing it. I was telling the devotees, sometimes when you hear about other places and how devotees are serving, then you can appreciate your situation. I'm spending most of my time in Poland now, and the conditions are very austere there. For example, from early March until late May, we had a traveling festival program. We did 21 festivals in some major cities in the south of Poland. It's an industrial area where most of the people live. And the air is so bad there that just by breathing the normal air during a routine day, it's equivalent to smoking 5 packs of cigarettes a day. and they do mining there, coal mining. The average age, I think, is 45 or 46. It's so polluted. And we were doing our festival program there. And for those few months, the snow was 3 or 4 feet high, and the temperatures were very often 25 degrees below zero. Now, that was particularly austere for me, because I was born and raised in California, in America. And, you know, I wasn't conditioned to 25 degrees below zero. And we had a base where we were 60, 70 devotees. We had a base, and the only place that we could find that was available was an old hospital, which only half of it was functioning. So the hospital was one half of the building, and we moved into the other half of the building. And there was no heat there. We got these kind of strange little Polish furnaces, which we were using. And we set our temple room up in a room downstairs, which had some marble on it. It was strange finding marble in this. There was no windows, but it was down, and we were able to heat it better because it was below the surface. And we used that for our temple room for many months, and then we just recently found out that that used to be the morgue. they put the dead bodies. So we're in this hellish, most hellish place in this industrial area in Poland. You know, you blow your nose after high enough, it come out black from the soot. And we were getting sick, you know, because of the pollution. Devotees were coughing up. They cough up black. So hellish. Having Mangal Artik in a morgue. And, you know, 25 degrees below zero. And our prasadam, this is the standard. I just visit there, but this is the standard for the devotees. This is how the Vaishnavas, this is their devotional service. You know, it's in Poland, it's cold like 7 months a year. So our prasadam was, we had cabbage and potatoes in the morning, and we had a big variety in the evening. We had potatoes and cabbage. We had cabbage and potatoes in the morning, and then in the evening we have potatoes and cabbage. This is how we tell ourselves there was some variety. Well, you lose a lot of weight there. If you want to lose weight, that's a good place to go. Just now the vegetables are coming out, that people look forward to the summer season, because you get, you know, like you get some spinaches, you get some broccoli, and every square inch is utilized like that. Like you see in the West, people are so opulent that they have beautiful gardens, you know, with flowers and lawns and things. But there, people can't afford that luxury. If they have some extra space and the springtime comes, they don't plant lawns and oak trees and, you know, things like that, brick pathways. Every single inch, they put seeds in the ground so that, you know, for a few weeks in the summertime, they can get some green vegetable. Because I was actually going nuts, you know, it's just cabbage and potatoes. And then I told a story yesterday when I arrived in L.A. yesterday. I met some devotees in the airport. I was so hungry. And it was so strange, but they were going to the airport with a pot of dal and rice, you know, and a little sabji was there in a plastic container also. I was thinking, wow, I can't believe it. Some devotees here, they were coming to serve the Manipur dancers who were visiting L.A. In the airport, they had this. So I went and I got some sabji. What was it? Cabbage and potatoes. Oh. Los Angeles, I mean, this is a place, you know, like oranges and pears and apricots and all kinds of things. So, of course, the rewards of preaching in such austere conditions are that, Prabhupada said, preaching in the snows of Russia is sweeter than the sweetest mango. So the people of that country, Poland in particular, they're very sweet. The people are very sweet. They're very pious. We go in Harinam, we get 30, 40 young kids dancing with us every Harinam. We get like, you know, 500 to 1,000 teenagers at our programs. We have a rock and roll band. I was dead set against it. Conservative. But the devotees, you know, convinced me. We did it and it was great. We just sing Hare Krishna. And it's one of the five most popular bands in Poland now. They're really good. I mean, the boys are really, really good musicians. The lead singer, Sri Prahlad. He used to be here in the Grokol. He's very famous now in Poland as a rock and roll singer. But on Hare Krishna in Poland, it's like if you know a Hare Krishna, it's cool to be a Hare Krishna there. Like people say, you know, like you know what Hare Krishna is, you know, and netbees are like really popular. The kids, you know, and I have one kid saying, you know, you those Hare Krishna, you can't wear those. Do you smoke or drink? You can't wear because those Hare Krishnas, they don't. So to be known, even to be associated with the movement, is very prestigious. You know, so, of course, the austerities are there, but the pleasure of the service transcends any austerity that we have to undergo. But it is a fact that, you know, we'll probably cut a few years off our life living in such an environment where you cough up black mucus every day and just eat a diet that has very little nutrition in it and so forth. So I think I just wanted to point out here that you're so fortunate here because, I mean, you have some of the most beautiful deities in the world. That's no question about that. And, you know, there's three altars here. There's not so many places in the world. I knew Mayapur, I think Villa Vrindavan, maybe in Australia also, all other places. But to have so many beautiful deities, big Giriraj Shila, second only to the one in Mayapur. I mean, you can really, I have a little Govardhan too, he's only this big, and I have to really look at him. Here you can see him so beautifully, and you know, even in the wintertime, it appears that the weather is quite nice, and there's so much fruits and flowers for offering the deities. I mean, in the winter, in other places, you know, you just dream of flowers. But here it appears even in the winter that there's flowers available. So materially, just like India is the perfect place for self-realization, so also here. And spiritually, no doubt, that there's so much opportunity because Krishna is here and there's also so much facility for preaching. So I always look forward to coming here because I see it like a spiritual retreat. Come and see all the devotees, little devotees, big devotees. As we just finished this tour, I was very exhausted, and especially I flew 28 hours from Budapest through Warsaw, and then I came here. I was thinking, this is Vaikuntha. This is really Vaikuntha. I just wanted to let you know how I see it. Because I know myself sometimes when I stay in one place or when I get familiar with the scene and the devotees, you know, to be careful not to make offenses in the Holy Dham, not to see the residents of the Dham as ordinary people, not to see the Dham itself as some ordinary place, but they're special people that live here and this is a special project and it's a special opportunity for all of you. And I just wanted to say that coming in and appreciating it myself is something like coming off the battlefield for R&R. They call it rest and recuperation. Coming off the battlefield, coming to a place, I'm so happy that Prabhupada has a project like this where the preachers can come and take shelter of the wonderful facilities and all the nice Vaishnavas. So thank you very much. Grantaraj Shimad Bhagavatam ki, Shri Prabhupada ki, Sisi Vada Govardhanbhari ki, Krishna Balaram ki, Shishi Gornita ki, Du Govardhan Dham ki, Gaur Premanandi.